This program may not represent the views of Bonneville International Corporation or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions from this broadcast are solely those of the individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of Solutions Developers Corporation, providing consulting, application development, and business productivity solutions on the Microsoft platform. Federal Tech Talk is the show that opens the world of technology to the federal government. Every week, John speaks with public and private sector IT experts to help you understand some of the IT trends and challenges that your agency might be facing. Federal Tech Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Now, your host, John Gilroy.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. So I'm here with Curtis Turner, who's a program manager for benefits.gov at the Department of Labor. How are you doing, Curtis?
Doing fine, John, and I want to say thank you for inviting us in to talk to you today.
Great. We're going to have a lot of fun here today. I love to talk about successful projects. I live in the world of software development, and I've seen a lot of failures in this area. It's always a challenge to get together and especially to collaborate with different agencies. And that's why I wanted to bring you in, Curtis, because you've had success collaborating with different agencies. And I'd like to maybe do a quick interview here, find out some of the best practices, some of the lessons learned, what some of my listeners can maybe take away from this. But first of all, I want to find out a little bit about you and how you wound up in this position. Maybe you can give us a quick background.
Well, John, I spent about 28 years working for the Postal Service, which, as you know, is a very citizen-oriented or customer-oriented organization, and I spent a great deal of that time in their IT organizations, as well as building the internet channel for the Postal Service, which was eventually the flagship for selling products and service for the Postal Service on the internet. I saw a advertisement from the Department of Labor that said they were looking for a program manager that would run their govbenefits.gov e-gov program. And I applied, and they asked me to come do the job.
From the challenge involved, I'd say maybe no one else applied, because you have to gather all this information from different agencies. Right now, it's 70 different agencies, 1,000 different programs, and present it in a website that is coherent and easy to read. Kind of a difficult challenge just in and of itself, isn't it?
Yeah, it really has been. The early days of GovBenefits, back in 2002, the current administration initiated, I think there were 24 eGov projects. And I think under the banner of Quicksilver, GovBenefits.gov was one of those projects. And it was, by the way, the first one to make it to the internet and start providing services.
So what you have is you have a disaster, whether it's in New Orleans, whether it's in Nebraska, and citizens need to get information of what benefits they can get from the federal government. So rather than picking up a phone or sending out a smoke signal, they would go to one site that would generate information for each one of the citizens. I see the parallels with the post office, though. I mean, it's many different citizens in many different geographic locations having information about a whole wide range of applications.
That's correct, and I think that was part of the attraction for me to the job was the fact that it would be very citizen-oriented, very outwardly facing, as opposed to simply a service that would work internally with the government or within a single agency. GovBenefits.gov provides all citizens, including federal government employees, a look at any kind of benefit, regardless whether it's disaster-related or housing-related or any other kind.
You know, it's coordinated through the Department of Labor. I mean, it could have been coordinated through any other several different departments. How did it wind up at Labor?
Well, I'm not really sure how it ended up at Labor, but I think I know that at the time they were figuring out who would be the managing partner for each one of these initiatives. I think it made good sense that something that was related to creating easy access for benefits went to the Department of Labor, because the Department of Labor is a benefit organization. They provide things like unemployment insurance, which is a large benefit program.
It would make sense that they'd have a history of bringing in information and seeing if it complies with certain rules that would result in some type of a financial benefit for a citizen.
Right. If you look at benefits and benefit programs, the Department of Labor has a long history of operating and managing those kinds of programs. And I think it just kind of made sense that if you were going to do an a government-wide initiative that would bring benefits from all agencies into one portal on the Internet, Department of Labor was a good choice for a managing partner.
You know, Curtis, I'm a young fellow, and I don't know if I can remember back to 2002. I was probably in grade school at the time. So 2002, you started off the program at Benefits. Were you there then?
I was not. I began managing the program in 2005.
Mm-hmm. But it's ramped up since then, the last 5 years, hasn't it?
Oh, absolutely. In 2002, there were 10 partners, 10 government agencies involved in govbenefits.gov, and since that time, we have expanded the number of partners to about 17 of the major agencies.
I have spent some time living in Florida, and there's all kinds of adventures with climate changes in Florida, whether it's floods, whether it's hurricanes, and sometimes the state would provide assistance for people who are homeless or need food stamps. It's difficult because you may have to generate information not only from other federal agencies, but from state agencies as well. Is that right?
That's correct. GovBenefits has the most of the benefits on GovBenefits are related to state agency management of federally funded benefit programs. And let me give you an example of that. The USDA has a food stamp program, and what they do is they provide funding for states to manage their individual food stamp programs. So when you're looking at benefits.gov and you're looking for food assistance or nutrition, you're likely to find a benefit program for each of the 50 states and also one that simply says this is USDA's program.
So if I'm homeless in Florida or I get flooded out of a house in New Orleans, I need information not only from federal organizations but possibly from the state ones as well because they have to be integrated.
That's correct. Benefits.gov has a pre-screening tool, and as you start to answer questions about your situation, one of those questions might be, what state do you live in? So what you would see as a result, if you're looking for food and nutrition, would be probably food stamps program for the state of Florida, as well as seeing USDA's overall program description.
I have two sisters that live in L.A., and let's say L.A. gets hit with, God forbid, a earthquake tomorrow. And so it's possible that they could go to benefits.gov. Now, the first step would be some kind of a screening, information screen. Is that what that would normally happen?
That's right. They'd screen for what your situation might be, who you are in the sense of you might be a 34-year-old woman, you may be college educated, you may have specific needs, things that fit your particular situation, but not your personally identifiable information.
And I think one of the challenges is that I just toss that out because I have two sisters in L.A. Maybe you have two sisters who live in Hawaii or relatives who live in Maine. There's no way to predict geographically or topically what kind of disasters will hit. So the benefits site had to be designed in a kind of more flexible fashion, I would think, than other traditional sites.
That's true, and it is flexible. Benefits.gov simply carries benefit programs from all of the agencies that might support any situation that the government supports in terms of a benefit program. When we start talking about disaster specifically, we start talking about what FEMA is doing in cooperation with GovBenefits to post a site that's called disasterassistance.gov that specifically addresses disaster assistance. And since it's integrated with benefits.gov, it will also provide you with other benefits that are not disaster-related.
Systems integration and FEMA. Would love to maybe dive into that topic after the break here. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we're speaking with Curtis Turner, who's a program manager for benefits.gov at the Department of Labor.
Federal news and information just got more fun and interesting. Amy Morris joins Tom Temin on The Federal Drive, weekday mornings from 6 to 10. Tom and Amy tailor their show for Feds on the Go with usable information from trustworthy and seasoned journalists. You're going to learn, but they also might make you laugh. The Federal Drive with Tom Temin and Amy Morris, 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.
Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we are speaking with Curtis Turner, Program Manager, Benefits.gov at the Department of Labor. It is a site that works, it's successful, it's won awards, and the reason I brought Curtis in was to talk about just the whole idea of collaboration and working with different agencies, different programs, and kind of assembling all this information in order to serve citizens in kind of a flexible manner. Many of my listeners may have some technical questions about how this all started. Maybe you can indulge me with maybe some technical information of how this started off, what kind of database it started off with, and how it's made this transition since 2005, Curtis.
Well, John, over the period of time since GovBenefits launched in 2002, it's had essentially the same components to it, which would be a database, of course, is a relational database that keeps track of all the benefit programs, an application layer, which essentially does the pre-screening process. It relates the responses from the citizen user to the individual benefit program, so it makes sure that it spins up the right programs based on an individual situation. And lastly, there's the display layer, which, of course, is on the web. So there's web applications in play that take care of managing the content for GovBenefits and also presenting it on the web.
Kind of a standard traditional approach to managing a database for an outward-facing site.
That's correct. And over time, the tools that we've used have essentially been the same tools. We don't see much need for change in terms of the individual tools up until about 3 months ago, which is when we started to migrate the application and the databases into a new environment hosted by the Department of Agriculture.
Wow, from labor to agriculture. But before we delve into that change and that transition, tell me about branding and the whole benefits.gov site itself. Maybe you can clear it. Maybe some confusing for some of our listeners.
Sure. Since its inception in 2002, we've had the name govbenefits.gov. And we have found through the use of that URL in the media, through responses that we've gotten from our customer satisfaction surveys, that it's been somewhat confusing. And quite frankly, it's difficult to say govbenefits.gov. Majority of people think that that means that this is a website that specifically talks to federal employees about government benefits.
I never thought of that. Yeah.
And that's been confusing, and we've heard ourselves mentioned on the radio a number of times as that fedbenefits.gov.
Whoa. I guess it should be citizen benefits. I mean, yeah. then you think of a citizen. What do you mean, citizen of France or something? I mean, that gets confusing as well. It's hard to be simple and effectively communicate. So govbenefits.gov is now benefits.gov. Start off with a few programs. Gone from 55 to transition to 1,000 programs. And so you also work with agriculture and hosting these environments. Is that correct, to make a transition here just this year?
That's correct. And the brand change from govbenefits.gov to benefits.gov has taken place at the same time we've moved our hosting environment. For the last 3 or 4 years, the U.S. Department of Agriculture has provided us with our hosting environment in Kansas City. It's at one of their national technology centers. And it's a government agency, of course, and they have as part of their mission to provide services to other federal agencies. So in our search for an adequate host, business decision was made to continue to host with a federal government agency that we know is in compliance with all the government rules and regulations regarding technology, and they provide services to us for a fee for those services.
Interesting that we're talking about brands here, and I think many of my listeners, when I think of the cloud, think of branded cloud applications, whether it's Amazon or Google or Microsoft or whoever's out there. And this may be an example of a private cloud. Well, the federal government can also host clouds, and they can provide services for a fee as well, and that's what we have right here.
That's true, and essentially the fees that we pay support USDA's expenses in supporting us, so it works out really well. Moving from their infrastructure, which was a traditional infrastructure for us, they hosted all of our equipment. We owned all the equipment. Consequently, we also owned the responsibility to refresh that equipment periodically, maintain it at a systems level, while the USDA component took care of the networks. We had all the responsibilities for systems administration on our own machines that would cost more money in the future as they needed to be replaced or refreshed. So we asked USDA if they could provide us a solution that would reduce our costs in the near term and in the long term. And in fact, that's what they did. They are responding to the market demand for shared services. They have a data center that supports more than just USDA, and they were willing to work with us to create some sort of a shared service platform that involved not just the infrastructure, but also included the software that was required to run our applications and run our infrastructure.
You know, it's kind of interesting. I keep thinking of organizations, brand name organizations, competing for your business in the cloud. I never thought that, you know, well, one person would be standing in the lobby from Amazon, another person would be standing in the lobby from Google, the other person standing in the lobby to see you would be from the Department of Labor, and each going to come in and they're going to pitch Curtis, and they go, well, Curtis, this is what we can do for you. But that's, in fact, what Labor did.
That is what we did. We did look in the marketplace. We did extensive market research. And at the time, we did the research, which was, a good 18 months before we actually made the move to USDA's cloud environment. The industry was just starting to shape its product set for what was then known as cloud computing. And they didn't offer all, no single individual vendor was at the time offering what we needed to have. It just didn't meet our requirements. It was clear that the pricing models for cloud computing 18 months ago was not very clear from the vendors. It varied widely in terms of cost, and the services were different and probably not what we needed in terms of having an environment that was suitable for government inspection, for government security. And USDA was just beginning to build their capabilities. And on our end, we were a customer that had pretty specific requirements, and they were able to accommodate that at a reasonable cost.
And geographically desirable as well, I would think, because Kansas is a good central location, which I've seen the large branded cloud providers, many of them are in the Midwest, kind of coincidentally, and some are in North Carolina and some in other parts of the world. But all of a sudden, suppose you don't want to have your website located in Italy or, I don't know, whatever the cloud distributes it. If you work with agriculture, if they say it's in Kansas, probably a good chance it's not going to be stored in some other country, huh?
Probably not. That was not part of the arrangement, was to have it stored beyond our shores. And I suspect that all of the cloud services that are provided by them at this time are internal to that facility or their facilities across the nation.
That would make me comfortable if I were in your shoes. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I want to talk more about transition and what if there's a disaster in North Carolina and you're on the ground and you only have a handheld device. Can you go to a website like benefits.gov and get information? And the whole idea of transitioning and changing to keep up with the mobile and handheld markets, kind of a whole new world out there. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we're speaking with Curtis Turner, who's a program manager for benefits.gov at the Department of Labor. We've had a pretty wide-ranging conversation in the first two blocks of the show. Talk a lot about technology issues, talk about collaboration with different agencies and the challenges involved in that. But one challenge is maybe a technical challenge where you may have persons or citizens on the ground who are trying to find out what the benefits are and want to access them with handheld devices. What has your organization done to respond to that, Curtis?
Well, I think, first of all, we've created code that will resolve on handheld devices and made it easy to get the images of benefits.gov and use the application from handheld devices. I think along the lines of getting the message, we've also created a Twitter account. So we do tweet things once in a while. And while we're not on Facebook at this time, we certainly are scanning the horizon for any way that we can publicize or greet the media with information about benefits.gov, because it is our objective to make access to government easy. And the first step in that is to make people aware.
And you have to just understand new modalities for communicating that type of information. We talked earlier about starting in 2002 with a few dozen programs, now 1,000. Where do you see this transitioning here in the next 4 or 5 years? More programs, more agencies, or more specific? Or how do you see the transition taking place here, Curtis?
I think that over time we will look at benefits.gov as a platform for not just specific benefit programs, but also services that the government provides that could be a benefit to an individual, yet not be a benefit program specifically called out as a funded program.
So more of a generic type of benefit.
Absolutely. If the government is making it possible for you to receive some training through something that's not specifically a benefit program, I think you ought to know about that. I think you have a right to know about that.
As far as benefits and different agencies, I am certain that The Social Security Administration has different ways to provide for benefits. Have you looked at any of their sites? I've never compared benefits.gov with other benefit-type sites like that. How do they stand up? Have you compared them and tried to see how they've done it?
Well, actually, Social Security Administration is one of our partners with benefits.gov, and we had, from the early days, we had a mandate to make sure that pre-screening was only done in one place for the federal government. So we were going to reuse our technology. We're going to create the capability and reuse the technology. And Social Security stood up and said, hey, we have a benefit pre-screening tool. We call it BEST, which is Benefit Eligibility Screening Tool. And over a period of about 2 years, several years ago, what we did was we created the BEST application for Social Security on Gov Benefits, which allowed Social Security to actually shut their capability off. So, in fact, we have a mission-critical application for the Social Security Administration that we support from Gov Benefits.
And here I thought I was going to stump you on that question. You hit it right out of the park.
I had an answer.
Yeah, it only makes sense. I mean, if there is code out there, most smart software developers are going to say, well, I'm not spending 3 weeks writing this. If this agency has code that I can use, I might as well use it. And if I can take it and make it better, why not?
We see opportunities for this all the time. We see it with other federal agencies where we have a product with benefits.gov that can be rebranded or recolored for an individual or specific agency, like we did with Social Security Administration. And I think probably the best and most recent example of that is the disasterassistance.gov website, which is owned and operated by FEMA. We provide the front end to that site, and we do the pre-screening for it. FEMA does all the heavy lifting in the background with disaster victims in terms of saying, here are programs that you can apply for, and if you'd like, we can take your application online right now.
So they're more of a clearinghouse for the information that you generate.
Absolutely. They reuse their current processes and their current systems in the back office and simply connected that to what GovBenefits has to offer in terms of pre-screening. That way, a disaster victim doesn't just go to a FEMA website. They can come to benefits.gov or disasterassistance.gov not only to receive the disaster assistance, but also can see other benefit programs that benefits.gov brings to the table.
It only makes sense. I mean, just from an outsider's perspective, I mean, if I'm already qualified for certain benefits under the Social Security Administration, it would be a nice first question to ask, because if you go through 10 questions, all of a sudden you have a very easy way to categorize the request and can funnel it to the right place.
That's correct.
Great. Just about 30 seconds left in the show here. Any more information you have for my listeners who are trying to consolidate and maybe collaborate with other agencies?
Well, I think that as the agencies start to look at one another as groups that can be formed, I think the best advice I can give to program managers in the federal government is to make sure that you clearly communicate the goals of your effort and that you engage your partners, that you provide a forum for governance, and you allow your partners to help you make decisions. I found that made all the difference with benefits.gov.
Reaching out and trying to collaborate. Kind of collaboration in work boots, as we like to call it here. You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'd like to thank my guest today, Curtis Turner, Program Manager for very successful benefits.gov at the Department of Labor, and it is a labor and collaboration and a very successful labor indeed. Thanks, Curtis.
Thank you very much, John. It's been my pleasure.
You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of Solutions Developers Corporation, providing consulting, application development, and business productivity solutions on the Microsoft platform. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear it in its entirety on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Federal Tech Talk, Tuesday mornings at 11, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, WFED, your source for federal news now.
This week on Agency of the Month featuring the GSA is brought to you by Commercial Data Systems.
GSAauctions.gov is planning a new tool that can help you become greener. Here's GSA's Dave Robbins.
To start being able to identify the carbon footprint savings for reusing an item as opposed to you know, having to buy a replacement item, what the carbon resource equivalent would be to buy that item. So we do want to further than the environmental benefits of buying this used property.
I'm Ruben Gomez.
Commercial Data Systems is a small disadvantaged information technology systems integrator specializing in virtualization, cross-domain security, and database operations. With more than 25 years of contracting experience, CDS understands how to ease the procurement process for government clients. CDS offers GSA schedule purchasing with over 200,000 commercial off-the-shelf IT products, including a blanket purchase agreement for your Oracle hardware and software needs. To learn more, visit cdsinc.com. That's cdsinc.com.